Welcome to the Disarming Leviathan podcast. My name is Caleb, and this podcast is designed to equip you to missionally engage American Christian nationalists in your life. I'm joined today by Nap Nasworth, who's the executive director of the American Values Coalition. He's also a good friend of mine. Nap has worked in academia, teaching courses in U.S. government, Congress, religion, and politics. He's also worked for many years as a journalist, opinion editor, and politics editor, specifically for the Christian Post. And we talk in this interview about his departure from the Christian Post on grounds of integrity, specifically related to backing a particular political candidate. I don't want to steal his thunder, but it's a spicy meatball, as they like to say. And Nap has been working for the last few years with American Values Coalition, helping to equip people to engage in this civic life together, engage in government and politics, while maintaining their integrity. And especially for those of us that are Christians, helping Christians maintain their faithful witness to the gospel while we engage in government, politics, and things like that. So I really enjoyed this interview. I've really enjoyed my friendship with Nap, and I think that you will enjoy this conversation as well. I hope that it's a blessing to you. Without further ado, here is my interview with Nap Nasworth. Nap, you have served as a journalist, which is pretty cool. And you worked for an organization, I think, called the Christian Post. But a few years ago, the organization went a certain way that was different than where you felt like your convictions were leading you. Tell us that story. Like, how did all that work out?
Yes, it was the Christian Post. I'd worked there for 8.5 years. And in 2016, we actually came out with an op-ed, our first op-ed ever. Meaning expressing the views of the editors of the Christian Post. We came out against Donald Trump during the primaries. And okay. It was so in 2016, before while Trump was trying to win the nomination, we were all together. We all agreed that Trump it would not be a good president, that he would be a danger, not just to the presidency, but also he would be problematic for churches as well, because of the way that he was going about recruiting Christians, saying, "I will be your protector." So we saw that as a danger as well. Hmm. So we all agreed in 2016. Then we kind of had a split during the general election, where some of us thought vote for Trump as an anti-Hillary vote, not because we were particularly excited about Trump. And then others of us, like me, I was saying, no, we shouldn't support Trump at all. Not that I supported Hillary either, but so you started to see the seeds of a split within the Christian Post, I guess, then. But then sort of over time, during the Trump administration, I saw like some of the editors increasingly go into a more pro-Trump direction, not always because they like Trump, but because they were more interested in giving our readers what they wanted. In some cases, they began to like Trump more, but often in cases, it was more sort of a skittishness about criticizing Trump because of some of the negative feedback we got from our readers if we did anything critical of Trump. So that continued to get worse during the Trump presidency. And then, so in December of 2019, you may recall Mark Galli came out with an op-ed for Christianity Today where he said that Christians should support impeachment or support the notion that Trump should no longer be president. And that got a lot of media attention because it was Christianity Today. And there was a lot of responses from Trump-supporting Christians. And then so it was about a week after that op-ed was published. It was the Monday before Christmas Eve, I believe. I was the only editor working that day because it was sort of a holiday going on. And I was about to finish my shift and leave for a two-week vacation. And then I got news that we were going to publish an editorial responding to Mark Galli. And I said, wait a second, this can't be an editorial because I'm an editor and I don't support it. and so that led into a bunch of conversations about, you know, my role at, and so forth. And I was told on that phone call that the decision to publish this editorial was explicitly designed to signal to our readers that we were joining Team Trump, right? And so I was like, well, if we're on Team Trump, I can't work for this organization anymore. And so I just quit on the spot. And that was ended my eight and a half years at the Christian Post.
Man. So how did that feel?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it was, yeah, it was a very difficult time. So much of my identity and my networks and the, you know, people I knew and our livelihood was wrapped up in, you know, my job there at the Christian Post. And it was the longest job I'd ever had. So, it was a difficult time. At the same time, I had a lot of people coming out and reaching out to me and lending their support and showing their appreciation for the stance I took as well.
Yeah. And I know, so this is 2019, just about to become 2020.
Yeah.
And Nap, you and I both know people who, whether they were in journalism, whether their vocation was pastor, leading nonprofits, leading businesses, serving for different companies. We know a lot of people who have similar experiences where there was not just this sense of, hey, this organization, this institution, this church, this nonprofit, that we trend conservative or liberal, or we, you know, most of us kind of vote this way or the other. There were these moments for many of us where there was a line in the sand, almost like a tribalism, like you're either in or you're out. And if you're not all the way in, then get out. And we know, I know a lot of pastors, and I know you do too, who were basically excused from their position because they wouldn't endorse a candidate. In our case, a lot of folks we know, it was endorsing Trump. So you're in this, you know, the end of 2019, there's this line in the sand. You made a decision based on your convictions. Like integrity says, I can't cross this line, so I'm out. Then what happened? I mean, you're on the precipice. Of course, you didn't see it coming, I don't think. You're on the precipice of a global pandemic, a lot of civic unrest and social upheaval. And then, of course, just a few months later, we've got, you know, January 6th. So what was that season like for you? What was going on in your head? What kind of work were you doing?
Yeah. So it was a crazy time for all of us. Right. But yeah, so I was doing some freelance writing. I did a little bit of ghost writing. I published a few op-eds. You know, I was so thankful for people who reached out, like, The Bulwark, Religion News Service. They knew I needed work and gave me some opportunities to make a little bit of money. It was small compared to the salary I was making at the Christian Post, but at least it was something, you know, a little bit of extra income to bring in. And then the few months leading up to the election, I was working for Christians Against Trumpism and Political Extremism. Okay. And so I was writing their daily newsletter in the 2 or 3 months before leading up to the election. Mm-hmm.
And so you're doing some sporadic work.
Yeah. Very sporadic.
Very sporadic. And I'm just noticing, for those of you who are only listening to this podcast, you're not watching the video, Nap has behind him a handsomely adorned American Values Coalition poster, AVC. So how'd you get connected to AVC, American Values Coalition, and what's your role now?
Yeah, so this was in 2021. Okay. So our board chair, Neil Rickner, came to me with this idea for a nonprofit organization that would help reach people who are struggling with just the political extremism that they see within their own communities, or in many cases, their own families or friendships, and a lot of the misinformation, especially at the time, you know, in 2021, we had just gone through a lot of misinformation regarding COVID and vaccines, and a lot of families had been struggling with that, you know. So you would hear stories like family members who worried, you know, maybe they just had a new baby and they worried about whether their parents were vaccinated and whether it was safe for them to even see their own grandchildren, you know, stories like that, or like family members that were lost because either they didn't take the vaccine or they took like ivermectin and all these sort of false cures that were going around.
Remember there was one thing about like bleach?
Oh, yeah.
Like putting bleach in the bloodstream or something.
So, yeah. So that was,
do not do. Yeah. I just want to give a disclaimer. Nobody should put bleach in their body.
Yeah. Don't drink it. There was actually a couple, religious couple, or I think they were pastors or had like this church or like a fake church or something that were selling these bleach cures. I think they're in prison now.
I'm laughing, but that's this terrible.
They had visited Mar-a-Lago before the Trump thing. So yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So you're watching all this political division, these conspiracy theories, bad data, political extremism, all that kind of stuff. And Neil reaches out to you.
Yeah. And a lot of our thought is, you know, and we're looking at this through the lens of broken relationships, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that people, we've heard so many stories and we know people personally or heard these stories about people who can no longer, you know, they no longer have a relationship with, like, he was my best man at my wedding, you know, or, you know, my uncle or something like that. So that we were looking at through the lens of that, and also just where people get their information from, how they spend their time online, and, you know, and how, you know, yeah, basically how they're spending their time, how that relates to them believing a lot of this misinformation or being driven toward extremism. You know, in some cases, you know, we've heard of people like, you know, people who join militia groups and start stockpiling weapons and these sorts of things. That's sort of on the extremism, but that on the extreme end, but that happens as well. Yeah.
And so how is AVC helping?
Yes, we are helping people. We want to provide people with community, help them understand that they're not alone in what they're experiencing with their friends and family and community members. And so provide that community, but also help them with resources and information. So we have our weekly newsletter, we have our book club, but you know, the biggest project we had, that we did last year was Mending Division Academy. This is specifically for church small groups. So it's a set of small group courses, 6 small group courses. Each of those courses deal with some of the major drivers of division within churches and within communities and within families. And the small group setting, we think, is a really good setting to kind of process the information that we're giving in each of these courses. And so that will help churches. I think if churches are adopt these courses, it will really help them sort of build resilience to a lot of the misinformation and a lot of the extremism that's taking place in their own lives and in their own communities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's zoom in on this for a minute. So it's called Mending Division Academy. What are some of the topics that this covers? Like, I can think about a dozen or so things that have caused division in my own community, in my circle of friends, in my church. What are kind of the main hits on this thing?
Yeah, so we think these 6 probably cover a lot of the main drivers of division. So there's one on social media use. There's one on journalism. There's one on conspiracy theories and political polarization. We have another one on political idolatry. What am I missing? I'm missing the other two.
That's okay. Okay. So they'll come to you. So yeah. Thinking about journalism, I remember hearing words like fake news. People will use language like, well, that's your truth. We are in this moment where folks will say, well, I did my own research. And what that functionally oftentimes means is I went to the internet and I found a source that aligns with my currently held convictions. Help us understand. And then I'm yelling at people because they have the opposite view.
Yeah.
So how does journalism play in the division that we see today?
Yeah. And there's just so many options now on the internet and where people can get their news and information. And there's so many networks, and there's YouTube channels and podcasts and all sorts of things where people are getting their news and information, and not all of them are reliable sources. But I would say there's a couple of things to keep in mind, in order to, not be getting your news from an unreliable source. Mm. One thing is, does your source, when they get something wrong, do they issue a correction? If they don't do that, they're not a reliable source, because all news organizations get things wrong, especially when you're covering breaking news. I mean, oftentimes when you're covering breaking news, you're not getting it wrong intentionally. It's just you're sharing the information you have at the time. It turns out to be wrong. You're right.
Yeah.
So that happens all the time. So then you have to go back and issue a correction. So if your news source isn't issuing corrections, then you don't have a reliable news source. Mm-hmm. You just have to be really careful about what you're sharing as well on social media. Oftentimes I'll see people on social media just share a news article and with a comment like, make up your own mind or see what you think or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which kind of washes your hands of the.
Yeah. Well, it's like Pontius Pilate, washing the hands. Like, this isn't my problem. I'm just leaving this here.
Yeah.
Plausible deniability.
Right.
One of my favorites is
spread the misinformation. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just asking questions.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorites. Well, asking questions is a way to spread false information, instigate violence, just because it's in the form of a question, what do you guys think about this? It doesn't absolve one of the responsibility for being thoughtful and shrewd in how they share information.
Yeah. And I think another thing, so the course on journalism is taught by Bonnie Christian, who is a journalist. Okay. And so she does a really good job of showing all the different angles about there might be some untrue information in your news feed, but one of the things she points out is the way that the message is delivered matters as well. So cable news versus reading your news, there's just an incentive structure there with cable news where they want to keep you on, continue to watch, they have to keep their audience coming back for more. And so there's just an incentive structure to present the news in a certain way that oftentimes isn't healthy. Oftentimes, all news tries to get your attention, and they get your attention through emotions. Anger is a good emotion that's often used. So you just want to pay attention to what your news feed is doing to you emotionally.
Yes.
You think about what your emotions are at the time that you're consuming your news. And think in those terms as well.
Nap, I grew up, my parents were Christian. we were part of the holiness movement, which had a lot of emphasis on, like, if, for listeners, you might be familiar with, like, purity culture and making sure to abstain from worldly things. You know, don't be corrupted by the world, usually meant don't smoke, don't drink, don't do drugs, don't watch rated R movies. And one of the things that I would hear is garbage in, garbage out. And the idea was, is if you're filling your mind with garbage, worldly ideas is one way to say it, that's actually what will come out of you. What you put in is what comes out. And many of the people, the generation that told me that, is now succumbing to fear-mongering, anxiety-ridden hate speech from YouTube, news radio, quote-unquote, or talk radio, steady streams. I mean, I've been in people's homes where they've had a quote-unquote news outlet on, you know, the volumes all the way up, and it's just fear-mongering. Everything is anxious. There's violent language constantly. You know, we're under attack, under assault, all that kind of stuff. And so if that gets into us, how might we express that other than, like is what comes out of us love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control? Or is it just more anxiety and rage and all that kind of stuff? And I know that that is one of the ways that division in our homes, in our churches, has been spurred on, is because of what we're ingesting in our media diet. Right. For those of us who recognize this in ourselves and also in our loved ones, what coaching might you give us, Knapp? How can we help our loved ones have a better media or journalistic diet? What are some tips and coaching you could give us?
Yeah, and I like the diet metaphor. You know, so eat your veggies, you know. Think about it in terms of, like, you know, what a healthy media diet would look like. As you were talking, I was reminded of George W. Bush was asked about what parents should do for their kids about obscenity on television. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, you can always turn on the off button. So I think a lot of people, when it comes to their news consumption habits, need to turn on the off button.
I love that.
And think in terms of, you know, this is a challenge too, because, you know, we live in a democracy where being a good citizen means being an informed voter. So you don't want to encourage people to just totally turn off all their news consumption, right? You should be aware about what's going on in your community, in your country, in the world. But I think for most of us, really, in terms of your daily news habits, it's better to get a paid subscription. Oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, paid subscriptions, you're going to be getting more reliable news. So there's just so much on the internet these days that, pick a good news source, pay for it, you know, and stick to that, and stop paying attention to all these things where you're not even sure where the news source is, but they're feeding you information that confirms your biases. And so you just want to, and then you end up sharing it without even, like, investigating whether it's a reliable news source or not. So that, you know, that all creates all sorts of problems. So, you know.
So real quick on that, Knapp, why is paying for a subscription to a journalistic enterprise, how does that at least give an opportunity for more integrity?
So when news sources rely upon paid ads, it tends to influence the way that they write their stories, the way that they write their headlines. There tends to be a tendency for those to be less reliable. That's not always the case. You can still find a lot of reliable sources for free. And that's a good thing. There should be free information on the internet that I think is a good thing. And I mean, if free, you know, it's that they make their money through the ads instead of, you know, your subscription.
Got it.
But that's just such a difficult model, for it to be sustainable. I think good journalism, and you know, there's some disappointment in this as well, but I think good journalism relies upon subscriptions. But I think on the flip side, the paywalls are problematic as well, because you want to share good information. And if it's all behind a paywall, all the good stuff is behind paywalls, then it's harder to share with, like, you know, your family member who's only consuming this bad information. You want to put him on a good diet of good veggies, but you know, but all your stuff is behind paywalls. So there's some other tools there. There's like GIF articles that some subscriptions get.
Yeah. And things like that. Where you're able to get like 3 or 4 free views each month or something like that.
Yeah.
So now, so again, thinking about, for those of us who are listening to this, we're thinking about, okay, what are we consuming? One of the things I would say in response to some of the concerns about paying for journalism is, usually, and this is this strange dichotomy in American culture, healthy diets are actually usually more expensive.
Yeah.
Like, you can get cheap trash and shove it in your body, or you can pay the extra money, what we think is extra money, for the good stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I would just notice that as it relates to food or other things that we ingest, oftentimes the things that are better for you cost more money, or at least you got to be intentional. It's the same with journalism, right? So what I hear you inviting us into, NAP, is just to consider, when we're consuming information specifically about politics, government, our common life together, to be intentional, to feed ourselves at least data that is coming from good faith actors, even if they get the data wrong, or they get or there's a slant that we don't care for. We have a sense that they're operating in good faith. And maybe even as we think about dieting, you know, having a good diet, if I just eat carrots all day, I might become malnourished. And so maybe it's good to even have a few different sources that maybe come from different slants, different perspectives. And then as I'm consuming all of that data together, I'm making up my own mind, or at least I'm hearing from a harmony of voices.
Yeah, a diverse media diet, I think, is important, but it has to be done with the right attitude, you know, because if you say you're liberal and you're reading conservative news sources or going to conservative, you know, video news or something, you can do it in a way that's more like hate watching, you know, and it's not it's not really seeking understanding. It's more, you know, just, yeah.
I've found this statement helpful to me as I've done that is, whatever my currently held, let's talk about politics, whatever my currently held political convictions are, am I able to articulate the opposite argument in a way that those who hold to it would wholeheartedly agree with? If I'm not able to articulate it, I don't fully understand yet and need to continue in the posture of a learner.
Right.
And that's helpful to, that's a helpful exercise. And so for our listeners, that may be a great question to invite your loved ones into, is, are you in a position to articulate the opposing view in a way that those who hold to it would wholeheartedly agree with? And that really is loving our neighbor as ourself. It keeps us from bad faith arguments or straw man arguments. So now thinking about, you know, how we can have a good diet in our journalism, we're going to consider, you know, paying for journalism, maybe even a couple different sources. What are some other things that can help safeguard us from these toxic divisions that are happening? Thinking about journalism, social media, even conspiracy theories kind of get up into that mess. Help us think more about that.
Yeah, so I think paying attention to your social media feed and how you interact on social media as well is a big one. You know, you don't want to be part of the problem by, you know, helping to spread misinformation. So make sure, like, if you're sharing an article on your social media feed, don't just share it because you like the headline. Make sure you've actually read the article first, you know.
Good.
Yeah. Or don't comment on someone else's post, you know, just by reacting to the headline, unless you've, you know, taken some time to read the article, and so that you can respond thoughtfully. And you can do so in a way that doesn't, like, contribute to you know, a posture of anger or division on social media. So in some cases, I think for a lot of us, we just whether it's talking about social media or our news consumption habits, think in terms of like how you're spending your time. Like your time is a valuable resource. The time you're spending, you know, watching cable news or on Facebook or whatever, could that time be spent, you know, more with, you know, your family members or giving service to your community or something like that? So, so think of your time as a resource as well, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And emotional energy too, I think is important. If I'm reading things that are stirring rage or anxiety within me, that's maybe an invitation from the Lord to just put that aside.
Yeah.
You know, usually, the people that I don't like or those who hold positions I don't like are rarely as bad as they're made out to be. And the people that I like or the team that I like or the posture that I like is rarely as good as I think it is. And so having just a balanced diet, but also checking in with what I'm feeling when I'm reading things, is also helpful to us. You're just noticing what's going on in our bodies.
Yeah. Paying attention to your emotions. But here's a good question. Like, have you ever blocked somebody on social media?
I blocked you.
Like what would be like, how bad would someone have to be for you to block?
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've got a few that I can think of, where I just, you know, everything that is coming out of their mouth is causing me rage or anxiety or, you know, shame even. And I just don't want to see that. So it's like, all right, well, get this out of my life.
Or in some cases, you're causing them to be angry. And so maybe you're doing them a favor.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Or like every time I post something in good faith, it's met with an accusation or a, you know, something of that tune. Yeah. That's turning on the off button to people. So as we're thinking about people in our lives who are sharing these posts or they're propagating conspiracy theories at their church potluck or on their social media account, and these are people that we love. So what might be some coaching you could give us on how we could approach them?
Yeah, I would say the first thing to understand is that you're not going to change somebody's mind in a single conversation. Mm. That oftentimes these, you know, it's about relationships. It's about building those relationships. It's about, you know, if you're engaging with somebody you love, you know, then that should be the first thing on your mind is, you know, treating them with love and kindness. And some cases just continuing to build that relationship before you even have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we don't change our minds that easily, right? So I would ask you and your listeners just to think about, you know, when was the last time you changed your mind about something? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen that often for any of us. Mm-hmm. And so when you're in a conversation with somebody that you're trying to get them to change their mind about something, just think of it in terms of, you know, you're asking them to do the hard thing. Mm-hmm. You're doing the easy thing, which is not changing your mind. You're asking them to do the hard thing, which is changing their mind. So think about it in that way will help keep you sort of grounded in humility during the conversation, I think, which is important. Because it's easy to come across, I think, as condescending sometimes in these types of conversations. And so you want to avoid that.
Yeah, and I have found that folks really are not going to change their mind if they feel like they're being talked down to or shamed, or humiliated. In fact, when I feel shame or humiliation, I kind of shield up. You know, like I'm not going to listen to anything you say, because I don't want to feel those feelings.
That's right.
So, So using hospitality, caring for the person, honoring them, being curious about what's going on inside of them when they're doing this stuff. And then maybe even an invitation to think more deeply about their social media habits or their media diet. One thing that I've found to be helpful is to say, to kind of do the reciprocity thing. And what I mean by that is I might approach someone and say, hey, you know, I've noticed that when I consume fear-mongering, anxiety-ridden news from my favorite news sources, that my blood pressure goes up, that I'm angrier, I'm yelling at people more. So I'm going to go on a media fast for a couple weeks. Do you want to join me? And then maybe you could be my accountability partner, just like you would with a diet, right? Like, hey, I want to lose 15 pounds. Do you want to? Let's do it together. We check in each day. And maybe let's just notice what's different about our lives. Notice our blood pressure. Notice our emotive state. Are we spending more time with our family? Are we less upset? You know, all those kinds of things. Let's just check in each day and see what happens. And that's an invitation, and it's both of us doing it. And so that is a way to share the burden, because I'm going to put my stuff aside. You know, I'm not going to eat chocolate cake every day, and you're not going to eat vanilla cake every day. And so together we'll eat our vegetables and let's see how we feel. And so mutuality and reciprocity can be a help. Go ahead.
Did you know that you just described the Benjamin Franklin strategy?
Who is Benjamin Franklin?
So our founding father. So Benjamin Franklin, he had this thing where he said, you know, to get like a political enemy, a political opponent on your side, you know, some people would say, oh, you go out of your way to help them and then they become your friend. But he said, actually a better way is to ask them to help you.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. So just in our last few minutes together, I want to switch gears because, Nap, I've heard you refer to yourself as a conservative.
Yes.
And I've heard you refer to yourself as a Christian. And I do a little bit of work addressing Christian nationalism. And one of the things that I've heard people say, or I've seen on social media, is this idea that the word Christian nationalism or Christian nationalist is a slur to refer to someone who is a conservative Christian who's engaging in civic life or voting or engaging in politics and government. How does that land with you, and how do you process through that?
Yeah, so first we should probably mention my credentials for this.
Okay,
so
great.
Before I was a journalist, I was in academia, so I have a PhD in political science, and I worked in academia for 6 years before I worked for the Christian Post, and with expertise in American politics and religion and politics.
Cool.
So conservatism, I think it's very much become a contested term these days, often because what used to be, so the Republican Party used to be the party of conservatism. And since the Trump takeover of the Republican Party, I would say it's no longer conservative in an ideological sense. But there's two different ways to think about conservatism, and that is ideological and another is cultural.
Okay.
And most often when people talk about being conservative, are we still on?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay. My computer paused. Sorry about that. All right. So most often when we talk about being conservative, people are really talking about cultural conservatism, not ideological conservatism. So okay. Cultural conservatism, it's, you know, one way to think about it is like a brand, sort of like, do you prefer Coke or Pepsi? You know, these are brands. And so when someone says I'm a conservative and they're meaning it in a cultural sense, this is more, you know, there's lots of different types of cultural conservatism, but it may just mean to them, it may just mean like somebody who prefers living in a rural area, drives a pickup truck, likes NASCAR, you know, something like that. Or, you know, there's other types of cultural conservatives, you know, some of these cultural conservatives are really into like talking about their masculinity and things like that. That's like another type of cultural conservatism that, you know, that really has no relationship to ideological conservatism, which is specific ideas about the role of government. And so an ideological conservative would say, for instance, that, you know, what one of the founding principles of ideological conservatism is that, the the forms of government that are closest to you should have most of the power. And so national government should have less power than local government, for instance, and local government should have more authority and make more of the decisions that affect your life than the national government. Ideological conservatives also prefer smaller government. They don't say no government. This is, they still want government. You know, they're not anarchist. We want a government, but it should be, it shouldn't be this large, expansive government that ideological liberals would prefer, for instance. And so you can relate that to healthcare and take for instance immigration. So you have on the right side of American politics now a lot of folks who, you know, it's become very opposed to more immigration. So that's that's sort of big government type of ideology. You know, you need a big government in order to control immigration or to send people back where they came from, and that kind of all that sort of thing takes big government, right? So that's not conservatism in the ideological sense. So what we see mostly on the right side of American politics these days can be described as like nationalist populism or something like that in the ideological sense. But we still talk about it as being conservative because we're using it as, you know, that brand. You know, people just think of it as a brand that they identify as being a conservative.
Yeah. So we're hearing the word Christian nationalist. And what I hear, and some people are saying, well, that's just a slur for Christian conservatives. So what I'm hearing you say, no, it's not like Christian nationalism isn't conservative in the American ideological sense.
Yeah, it's not even conservative.
So is Christian nationalism Christian?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, we can talk about it as being a heretical view of Christianity or a heresy within Christianity sometimes. I'm not sure the language you know, you're the pastor, you need to help me more with that one. But but yeah, it's definitely, you know, when you're at the point where you're putting your loyalty to your nation above your loyalty to Christ, then that's political idolatry. And then you're on a dark path at that point. You're no longer leading toward Jesus.
Yeah. And Nap, you would be delighted to know that there's a book coming out on July 2nd called Disarming Leviathan, which does do some work to help us think about Christian nationalism in spiritual terms. I think you'd love it.
I've read it. Yes, it's very good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. 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 Now I've got a pre-release copy. That's great. So now, where can people find you and your work?
So the work of American Values Coalition, go to AmericanValues.org, and you can see all the different projects we have going on there. For my personal website, it's just my name, napnasworth.com. where I put some of the stuff I publish outside of my work at American Values Coalition. But yeah, and sign up for our newsletter. I send that out once a week and keep people updated on news and information regarding political extremism and misinformation on the right side of American politics. So yes.
Cool. Well, Nap, thanks so much for being with us, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.